The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PlayUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 166, a special announcement episode where got a big announcement to make, you know, and you guys have been following me for quite some time, and, you know, it's with a little bit of a heavy heart, a little bittersweet, that I've decided to leave Eastern Michigan. Had a fantastic time with working for my old college football coach, Coach Chris Creighton. Who I believe in wholeheartedly and believe in what we're doing at Eastern and the way we've been doing it. But got a phenomenal opportunity to go work with Play USA and fired up about it. Play has been a part of my life, my family's life for the last 3-4 years. Think the world of the company, think the world of Brett Waits, the president and CEO, and you know, Rich Gray is a good, close, personal friend, and much of the staff there I've become really good friends with over the years, and been able to look from afar and just see how they've built that company with great people and great products. And going on as the vice president for performance and education, a lot of you guys know, you know, through the years here, I'm going on year 4 of being apart from my family. My wife and my kids still live in Tennessee. They did not go with me to Cincinnati or Eastern Michigan for a variety of reasons, mostly centered around some of the things that go along with adopting children. They're troopers. They're freaking ultimate coaching family, and you know, we've gone and we've made it work. But the reality is that you know, I missed the first 5 years of my twins, first 3 years of my daughter. My half-brother missed the first 13 years of his life. They are all 4 in high school now, and I don't want to miss the last 4 years that they're in the house. And so I wanted to make sure that I can come home. This opportunity gives me that. A lot of you know, just like with this podcast, I have a deep passion for the profession. I have a deep passion for coaches. This is going to give me an opportunity to lead in a big way with a huge platform and continue to give back to this profession. It's given me so much to drive the as much as I can, the element, the education element, and really have an impact in this profession, in that arena, and then, you know, from adopting kids, from being over in NFL Europe, from traveling around in different ways, I've always been just so motivated by the opportunity to make an impact as a strength conditioning coach on a global stage. And you know, we're gonna do some phenomenal things at Play, and just so fired up about the opportunity and you know, really excited to see where we can take this thing in the next years here. And so, like I said, it's bittersweet. I really believe that we're headed the right direction at Eastern. Most people will run from opportunities like that. You know, I left the Cincinnati Bengals to go there. We are. A force to be reckoned with this next year, and so I would encourage everyone to watch what Eastern's going to be doing and how they do it. And super excited. My two assistants, Brian Fink and Fred Hale, have been elevated to the head strength coach position. So fired up to continue to develop young coaches give them opportunities. And we've got a phenomenal staff there, so I know they're in good hands. And love the kids, love the program, and excited to be a fan from here on out. But be starting this next week here with play. Please reach out. I'd love to hear your feedback on what we can take this thing. What are some gaps that exist out there right now in the education space and the performance space? And how can I serve you and give back to the strength and conditioning community in a big way? And so please reach out. Love to hear your thoughts. We'll be sharing quite a bit about my journey and the transition and what we have going on in the next upcoming episodes. But wanted to let you guys know first. What was coming down the pipe, and like I said, I'm just thankful to Brett, Rich, the rest of the gang at Play for giving me this opportunity to make an impact on a global stage, to give back to coaches in a big way, and most importantly, be able to be at home with my family. Today, got a great episode for you. Daryl Gray is the head strength coach, head men's alpine skiing coach up at Burke Mountain Academy up in Vermont. Does a phenomenal job. It's freaking a very unique situation where it's basically a ski private school up there. They produced champion after champion, several Olympians. They travel the world and compete. It's just a phenomenal situation. And so something that I didn't know much about. I love skiing. It's one of my favorite things to do. Wanted to learn more about how they go about their, you know, addressing the physical demands of the sport and how they program for that. And then just the unique situation of what they got going on up there. So I know you're going to get a ton out of it. We dive deep down into it. I know you're going to enjoy Daryl. Sit back and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, super excited to have Daryl Gray with us. Daryl is the director of strength and conditioning, head alpine skiing coach, men's alpine skiing coach up at Burke Mountain Academy. You got my dream job in the mountains, coaching strength and conditioning. So, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
Dale, if you would, I mean, just tell us a little bit about the story. I mean, obviously skiing is a major part of that, but, you know, kind of what got you into strength and conditioning per se, and what led you there to Burke?
Right. Well, the strength conditioning side, I started off ski coaching, and you have to be careful about the things you're passionate about because you never know where they'll lead you.
That's right.
I'm originally from North Carolina and in Virginia, and was working with some skiers on the weekends in Virginia, and we were doing some conditioning. We did a dry land camp, we call it, and did some US ski team medals testing. And the first group, the first time we did these tests, our athletes ranked in the bottom 10%. And I was looking at the scaling and was wondering, well, who are the 100%ers?
Right.
And so we did very remedial training. You know, I just looked at the tests. They were a simple test. And it's like, okay, we need to run some. We need to do some push-ups and some sit-ups. You need to just do some bodyweight training. And the next year we did the test. We scored the 30 and 40% on percentile. And then the next year I had kids in the 100 percentile across the age groups. Really, and it was a realization for me is that we lived in Virginia, so we didn't have access to great training. I wasn't a great ski coach, but there's no reason we couldn't be strong.
Right.
And so that was really the start for my interest. In college, I raced bikes and rode bikes and ski race at a very low level. But I always had the idea of training and understand and love training. But it wasn't until then that I started thinking about the training of others for strength and conditioning. When I had the opportunity to come to Burke 19 years ago, for a job, was my first exposure to working with athletes in this way full time. So obviously we have an on-snow coaching environment, but we ski about, the max we'll ski is about 150 days a year, which leaves, you know, 215 to do other things, if my math is correct there. So we got involved in the strength conditioning here as part of being a sport coach. We also did strength. And then we had a transition after my third year where our athletic trainer at the time, I'll name drop Bill Knowles, became very, if you probably know Bill.
I do.
He was very integral into really putting some method behind our madness in our training. and worked under his sort of leadership for a couple of years. And then when he left, I took over the strength conditioning side of things. And so from that perspective, then it was a really a matter of opportunity to just learn every day. And I've learned a ton from the athletes I have. They are way more capable than they think they are and that I think they are. That's what I learned pretty early on is they can do way more than we give them credit for, high school age students.
Absolutely.
And so, and like it was, you know, very instrumental in terms of how we even set up our training. And some of those things, he could come back today, wouldn't be that different, you know. And in other ways, we are very different, you know. As one would hope, after 15 years goes by, you're a little smarter and a little bit better.
No question. What type of student athlete is there at Burke Mountain?
We're high school, so we're freshmen through senior year high school. We also have, which is full time, we also have winter term eighth graders that come just for the winter months. And then we have postgraduate athletes that'll be that are at least from the summer through the fall and end in early spring. Often they have jobs and have other things to get ready to go do, whether they're making the national team or going to college. But so our age group ranges from 14 at the youngest for the winter up through 19-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, so many times, and this is something that, you know, this is a conversation we just had with my wife. You know, my son is he's a freshman in high school. He's a wrestler. You know, and talking about accountability and expectations and you know, just having that conversation. There's so much more that can be done with that age group in terms of accountability and goal setting and then people want to admit sometimes. And
so I
couldn't agree with you more on that. And skiing, you know, it's something it's been a passion of mine. You know, I go back to when I was in high school, we lived in Kansas City and went to high school in Kansas City, and when wrestling season ended, you know, you had about a month and a half of skiing, 2 months of skiing left, and I would drive 10 hours out to Colorado every weekend, ski all day Saturday, all day Sunday, drive through the night, and sleep in the parking lot and go to school on Monday, and I'd do it for four or five straight weekends,
right.
Just because I loved being on the mountains, and what I loved about it as an athlete was how strenuous and rigorous and you know, and then the peaceful side of that as well. But talk a little bit about the athleticism of an alpine skier and what's required to do the job.
Right. I always thought that you take a great athlete and you put them on skis, they could be great. But the more I do it, I realize it's a sliding sport, and so you don't have the physical implant of your foot in the ground or on the court surface. So the balance demands are quite different. Typically, they're pretty well-rounded, again, because we have two-thirds of the year almost that you're not training on snow. So it's not like tennis or other sports or soccer where you can play year-round at one sport.
Right.
And so you have different training methods that you'll do partly to avoid boredom and monotony in training, but also to try to meet the demands of the sport requires. So you tend to be a well-rounded athlete. You know, you can run good distances, you can hike up a mountain, you can squat decent weight, you're fairly powerful, you can clean, you're pretty quick and agile, you can walk a slack line, you know, and you have balance abilities. So it's a pretty broad sort of picture here of an athlete that we tend to have and we try to develop. That's our biggest thing for strength conditioning, is developing athleticism.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier about, you know, how early on you were outside of those standards, and then through training you reached the top of the standards. What were some of the evaluation methods that you've used, and what's maybe unique to the sport?
Well, for us, in those standards in Virginia, you know, those things, some of them are still relevant today. And we have changed a little bit in terms of things we do. For example, we'll do a 60 to 90 second box jump. It's a 40 centimeter high box, and it's lateral jumps over a box. And so we're looking at a power endurance component. We'll also do a 20 meter shuttle for our testing. And so that's the old beat test, if you will.
Yeah.
And so that's a VO2 max aerobic capacity test. We'll do a vert jump for power. You know, when we're testing in the weight room, we're RM testing cleans and squats. We do a T-test for agility, balance, and coordination testing for agility testing. So we try to hit, and we have some other tests that we've done, 20-yard pro agility, that we've done in terms of pro agility. And there are tests that you can create that are more specific to skiing. So the box jump one that power endurance, I like to call it,
right.
Is a probably one that's a little more unique to us. The demand in skiing is the courses that we'll race in competition are anywhere from 45 seconds to a minute 15. And even those 5 seconds in, how hard you need to train and prepare for that versus a minute 15.
With how much of those tests is there? I mean, is there some standards to make the Olympic team? Is there some standards that the USOC is using that there's some correlation there?
Yeah, that's the thing. I when I researched, like, you know, what are the physical characteristics that have strong correlations to success as an alpine skier? There are about 20, and none are definitive. Right. We'd like to say that. That's one of the things, too, that over time I realized, you know, I can research these things and use research, use sports science to try to figure out what other nations are doing. And there are different studies that would show, well, ferritin levels was a strong correlation for success or lowering your fist points. And in skiing, everything's relative to this point system that you develop over time.
Sure.
And which the lower your points, the better you are. And so there are strong correlations that are lean body mass or just body mass for females or various aspects of that. There's tons of them. So there's not one physiological test that you could do to say this is the thing because it's also such a skill sport. And besides being skillful, I think Tudor Bumpa said is one of the characteristics, qualities of an alpine skier was courage.
Right.
If you don't have the willingness to go fast, your skills don't matter as much, and I don't care how strong you are. You have to be willing to risk or take risks to go fast. And
absolutely.
So, you know, that's why really ultimately the best skiers who've left here have been, I think I gave you some examples, would run at 175 or 3,000 meters, you know, in 10-15. They would squat two times their body weight minimally. They'll clean 1.3 to 1.5 times their body weight. Their bench will be laughable. It's the opposite of a normal high school strength conditioning. You know, we're way more focused on whole body and lower body.
Sure.
So I joke about the fact that, okay, you know, if I put a curl in an exercise, the guys would say, are you serious? You know, because it's rare that I do that. I tend to be whole body. But so in some ways, we just try to develop well-rounded athletes to allow them to injury-proof themselves to a certain extent. I guess I used to call it a collision sport, but then I had a trainer tell me once that, well, it has to be voluntary to be a collision sport. But the fact that when you crash at 40 miles an hour plus and slam into the hard ice snow, as you know, you try to protect yourself with your strength,
right,
and muscle development. So
you had mentioned that you're doing some blood lactate testing there, you know, it's another level than most high schools. Talk about that process and getting people to buy into that early on.
Again, we were trying to, you know, I always have this, I'm a practitioner first and foremost, I'm not a sports scientist, but I am curious. We always have a curiosity, there's what is the cause and effect of certain, you know, deterioration in training, if you will.
Right.
So we have access to blood lactate analyzers. Our Nordic athlete or cross-country athletes have been using it. So we use it in a camp in British Columbia that was an easy place to do it. There because they're relatively low. And basically we're looking at the buildup of lactate in the system over training, over time. In a week or 2 week, in this case a three-week camp, but also within the training session. And so we would take a run. This was GS training. We were doing this in the course would be anywhere from 45 to 60 seconds. We would wait a while, prick their finger, they'd go up, take runs. And of course, we inked over 6 to 8 runs. We were getting minimal values in the 14 to 18 range. But when you look at research that the U.S. ski team has done, you'll see that most likely you're adding a cumulative 4 millimoles each run or 5 millimoles each run. You're not going from 2 to 18 in a run.
Right.
And it was a cumulative thing. And so we were also looking at protocols for recovery between runs. When you're operating at those high intensities for that duration, it's important to clear what you can between runs so you can perform at your best from run to run. And so we had guys that we were walking. USC team had some protocols for just walk 5 minutes. They found the best thing between runs.
Right.
And so the guys would click off their skis at the bottom of the hill. They'd walk for 5 minutes in their ski boots, hop back on the lift, go to the top, and be able to have higher quality runs because they were more likely to get back down in that 2-3 millimole range, and in which they could handle for sure.
Sure.
So that's why we got into that, was A, to see how we could affect positively our training over time. Since it is a skill sport, the more quality reps you get, the better you're going to be. At the same time, it's a huge conditioning component,
right,
and recovery component there. And so you want to be able to be able to maximize quality training, you have to be fit and strong.
No question.
And you have to be able to recover so that you can work in that, again, 45 to 90 second range. It's not a good place to be, you know, if 400 meter runners would know. And when people run on the track 400 for the first time in competition, it usually ends ugly.
That's right. That's right.
So
you talked a little bit about injury proof in your athletes, you know, and I mean, obviously with a lot of that time being in the weight room, but the demands of the sport, it's kind of like NFL football, right? The NFL season's so long, you know, 16 weeks. You're going to be beat to hell by the end of the season, you know. And so what you can do in the offseason is a little bit limited by the abuse your body took during the season. You know,
sure.
I would say that's probably similar in alpine skiing where you've dealt so much abuse. And then so, like, how do you program and account for that stress when you're programming something like plyometrics or, you know, max effort, max strength protocols?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because right now we're in our transition period. April is a month for us, and we have some athletes who are finished racing, and we start racing some guys in November, so it is a long season, and we'll race into the middle of April. But most of our school is finished in the end of March. They may have done some skiing the first week of April. So we take 2 to 4 weeks where they're either on break for 2 weeks, and then when we're back, we're testing this week after 2 weeks off. But even this testing week has started off very easy, and our tests are, there has some intensity, but some of them frankly aren't that intense. So post season, we go through that transition month where we try to really let them wind down. We do some running, but we gear that up slowly. We have great biking here. And so that's another way to get stress off the body.
Mm-hmm.
It has its own, issues with biking. From a skier in terms of shortening hip flexor. You know, you ski in that bent position, then you get on a bike, you're going to do the same thing.
Right.
So we're always having to address that regardless. But it's a way for us. And then psychologically, it's probably harder on them than physically, honestly.
Right.
When you think about the conditions in which you're competing and training in day to day. You know, this year was very interesting in the Northeast. We had cold, snow, rain. A lot of rain, some warm, I mean, really warm, 55 degrees at times. Last year we had 65 or 70 days where it didn't get above freezing.
Wow.
The year before that, we had probably 15 races where the high for the day was minus 20. So just enduring that for 5 months is as much of an emotional, mental fatigue involved with getting yourself up for going out and training.
Sure.
And so a lot of it is just the change, the nature of the change of training. And now they're in shorts and tennis shoes, and they're not having to put on 5 layers to go train. And so that's a big part of our transition, honestly, is as much emotional, psychological as it is physical.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, obviously being at Eastern Michigan and dealing with cold weather and things along those lines, what have been some strategies that you've used to address, you know, extreme cold weather and training? And also, you know, what advice would you have for, you know, teams that are going to go train maybe from low altitudes to high altitudes as far as games and things along those lines?
Well, I'll address the weather thing. First of all, since we are an outdoor sport in the winter, we do a lot of our training in the fall outdoors. And so you start acclimatizing there. And then we have on snow camps that happen in June, happen in August, happen in September, happen in October and November. And so we're getting a little bit of that taste. We'll go from here to Chile, and it's full-on winter there in August, or New Zealand. Or we'll go on a glacier in Europe in October, and it's full winter there. And so we're getting some tolerance to the climate through that. And then it's a matter for on snow, we have proper clothing and good equipment. And typically in our training here, we have a warming hut at the bottom of the hill. So guys, when it's really cold, can come in each run if need be to warm up. But a good equipment, proper fitting boots, you know, the feet, the extremities are the issues in winter sports, cold sports. I'm sure it's the same for football, and having room in your shoes and in your boots for your feet, your toes to move around makes a huge difference in the temperature of your foot. Mm-hmm. So just little things you try to manage. Where our athletes are not good is in heat. Here, when they say it's 65 degrees, they're all complaining about how hot it is. And, you know, I'm from North Carolina, and I'm joking about, you ain't seen hot.
That's all relative, no question.
You know, but really, I don't necessarily want them to be that good in the heat, because where they really need to be good is in the cold.
Right.
In terms of altitude, we'll travel from, you know, near sea level here in Eastburg. We're about 1,100 feet, and we'll go train in 9 to 12,000 feet in whether that's in Switzerland or whether that's in Chile or Colorado. And the biggest thing is, and then we're also sometimes traveling to those altitudes and competing right away. And we're always looking at the, like, how many days do I need? That's always the big question to acclimate to altitude.
Right.
And it's almost better if you're going to go and you're going to race two starts to go the day before and just get it done before your body starts reacting to it.
Sure.
Day 3, 4, and 5 are typically the toughest days. And so when we're doing our training camps, we try to train for 2 or 3 days and then take a day off.
Right.
And try to be off during those low times. And it varies from athlete to athlete, but generally it's between day 3 and 5 if there's going to be a negative response to altitude is going to be around there. When we're in Colorado for 3 weeks, you know, by the 3rd week, everybody's feeling generally acclimatized to the altitude, and that's really not an issue for us. Also, if you're at altitude and you go away for a couple of weeks and come back, everybody's a little different that way, but I'm speaking generally.
Sure.
Early, the biggest thing for us is noticing the effect of travel. We use some first feed technology to look at sleep patterns after traveling 18 hours to Chile, and you're like, well,
you there? Daryl.
Yeah, you there?
Yeah. Try hitting your camera button at the bottom.
Yep. Okay.
It should be coming
up. There we go.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. That's weird.
Yeah.
You were saying traveling to Chile.
Yeah, so altitude. I'll just kind of go back to the altitude side of things for us is we found that we did some sleep studies using First Beat. As a technology to just kind of record their sleep habits and their patterns.
Right.
And for recovery. And after 18 or 20 hours down to South America, or even when we went to Europe and you're changing 5 time zones, 6 time zones, and after 18 hours of travel and you're at altitude, you know, the first few nights they're there, or sleep is terrible.
Right.
And you can't expect to get a whole lot done that quickly, you know, depending on the length and severity of travel. That's just a travel issue. For altitude, I was saying that if you have to compete, being there, either be there a week or so ahead or be there a day ahead.
Right.
If you're going to be there, usually the 3rd, 4th, or 5th day is the worst day, how they feel in terms of the negative impact of moving to altitude. And when we're in Colorado, we'll be there for 3 weeks, and then they may have races after the third week, and so they're pretty acclimatized to the altitude by that point.
Sure.
But if you're going in for one event, you know, and it's a bowl game, you know, and if they don't really have, you know, Denver or something like that, or a big game, regardless, they're all big, it's a tough one. But I would personally, I try, we're talking 9 to 12, that's a big difference between 5.
Right.
Six. You know, we go to Panorama, which is in British Columbia, which is around 5,000 to 6,000. That's really not that big a deal for us, honestly.
Right.
But 9 to 12 is significant.
Right. Yeah. So your advice for somebody that's in a football program would be to go the day before and basically just chalk it up that there's not a whole lot of acclimatization that's going to take place.
No, and there's not going to be a whole lot in day three. You know, frankly, you know, if you're really going to acclimatize, you almost need to be there several weeks.
Right.
And so if it was so then that's a matter of how well your athletes travel. You know, for us, we travel, we'll have athletes compete anywhere from 20 to 60 starts a year.
Right.
So they're traveling all over the country and they get pretty used to traveling.
Sure.
So packing bags and hauling bags to the airport, it's a normal thing for them, or in the van. So if your athletes aren't used to travel, then you might need to give them a little bit more time just to be settled and comfortable where they are.
Right.
And that's more the head than anything. That's psychology.
Sure. No question. I agree with you 100%. You know, we had talked briefly off camera about, you know, your high performance initiative, and a lot of the Olympic sport countries have that high performance manager and that high performance program. You guys are obviously getting something going there, and you talk about 8 key kind of domains. Kind of briefly, yes. Kind of go over those domains and kind of what you're trying to accomplish with that.
Sure, we had eight areas that we thought we needed to be really good, very strong in order to be excellent. And those domains for us starts with coaching. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if you think about this in a wheel, the center of this wheel is the athlete. It has to be the center of everything we do, and the coach is where the rubber meets the road with the athlete. And so having coaches who are lifelong learners, who are communicators, and understand that coaching is not about the sport and the technical X's and O's as much as it is the relationship between the coach and athlete.
Yep.
And trust and buy-in and all those things. So coaching is number one. We look at strength and conditioning as a node and trying to be excellent in what we do on that side of things. Sports medicine and really the integration from our athletic trainer through our coaches and communicating effectively, and that handoff can sometimes be kind of clunky.
Right.
You know, like don't give them to us until they're fully ready. Well, then they're never fully ready.
Right.
You know, then you, so the further we can reach into that side of things from a strength conditioning side, so the handoff is seamless, you know, the better that'll work. And we're a small staff. We have one athletic trainer, but he's awesome. And we have 10 coaches. So it's, we outnumber him 10 to 1, and we have to be more mindful that he's one dude, and right. We're 10 of us. And
right.
As athletes ranging from, you know, a cut to a blown-out knee. So sports medicine, sports psychology or performance psychology, the mental training, however you want to put it, it matters whether you have deadlines in your academic world or deadlines in the professional world, or you're trying to win this race in order to qualify for another one.
Right.
It all matters. And how you put your thoughts together and control your arousal level to mental long-term approach are all important things. See, that's four of those. We look at equipment. We're an intense equipment sport. Having the right boot setup and ski setup is huge for us. And so really being able to have the boot fitting and ski work together with where the athletes are doing their ski tuning.
Right.
There can be better cross-pollination of coaches and athletes working together. Then we're looking at, let's see, I'm losing my thoughts here. Okay, coaching. You think I would know these right off the top of my head. I've been talking about them for months here.
No, you got coaching, research, and testing.
Oh, yes. Research and testing is something we're looking to collaborate with various different groups, with a group down in Philadelphia, YSC Sports. And again, Bill Knowles and Finn Gunnarsson, Finn was the headmaster here, and he does a lot with coaching down there. And so utilizing resources that we know, and also looking to work with other skiing sport groups out there, US Ski Team, and that kind of thing. So research and testing is an important thing in terms of with our age group. People have a lot of information on college-age athletes and professional athletes, but not much with high school-age athletes. The whole nutrition side of things, and that starts from where we get our food. And since we're a boarding school, they eat all their meals here. And so we can't provide anything that isn't a good option.
Right.
And so if you start with that we have high-quality foods, we try to locally source them.
Right.
And part of our initiative is to see how far we can push that here in Vermont in terms of local sourcing. Unfortunately, Vermont's very progressive that way with farm-to-school programs and that kind of thing. So, you are what you eat ultimately. So the nutrition and then the readiness and recovery side has to do with sleep.
Right.
Has to do with, how we're looking at inner training rest periods. You know, we have 2 days, 3 days a week. So we train early in the morning before breakfast and we train in the afternoons. So it's what we're doing between training sessions. So a lot of that's just education, but it first of all starts off with, well, we got to provide good food so there are no bad options. And then since they're dorming situations here, so we have to have conducive environments for early rest, right? So going to bed at 9:30 and 10 is a viable option,
right?
Both in the load that we do on snow or on in our training, but also academically, how
sure.
we balance that and allow them to get the sleep they need.
So when you guys sat down and you wanted to go to this model and you were trying to get everybody on board, what were some of the steps you took to get the administration on board and to get the financing and the resources to be able to provide the best equipment or locally sourced food or whatever?
Well, you know, we're just starting this initiative, so talk to me in 2 years and I'll tell you exactly how that's working out for us.
Sure.
None of these concepts are new.
Right.
Obviously, and we have our board, many of our board for our school, the former Burke students, USC team athletes, university athletes, and so they know sport.
Right.
We're also building an indoor training center to look at the 5 month winter that we have and how we can enhance training age and physical development, physical literacy during the winter.
Sure.
Because the kids are coming in with a different skill set than they did 20 years ago.
No question.
And the board was really behind us and the staff were behind this initiative because it's all commonsensical. You know, if we're looking at our age athletes, I want to give you, if I was developing football players, I want to give you a well-rounded, fully prepared athlete that can go to college and cook for himself and can know how to squat and know the meaning of hard work.
Right.
Because all we're doing, I tell the guys I work with, that their best years athletically are going to be beyond us. And
right.
if we do our job right, you're going to have a long career in skiing or at least in the pursuit of physical activity and sport in whatever
yeah.
way it is.
That's a great way of looking at it.
Because we've had athletes leave here and become mountain bike racers, cyclocross racers, triathletes because they love the training.
Sure.
They found they love training as much as the on-snow competing competition. So. So the resources are there because the board recognizes that it's a no brainer in many ways and they have experienced themselves as athletes. And so it was not a hard sell.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Well, man, this has been great. Learning about alpine skiers and what you guys got going up there. We end the show with some resources. You know, give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh, well, I had two. I'll share two with you probably.
Yeah,
the first
great.
One was I was at a competition in Dartmouth College, and I was talking about burnout of athletes, you know, in the winter and not skiing them too much. And I had an Olympian at the time, and he wasn't a coach, but he had been a high-level skier on the Nordic side. And he said, you have to be careful not to keep them from doing what they're passionate about. So I might have been worried about burning them out. But he's like, don't rob them from their joy. And so, you know, you have the gym rat who just wants to shoot ball all day long.
Right.
Right? Why would you kick him out of the gym after 2 hours? Because you think it's the right thing to do in terms of your periodization model.
Right.
So, and the second one was I learned from an athlete. I was training. We were hiking the mountain, trying to work on aerobic capacity and some other things. And this guy was like, well, why are we and he's a full sprinter type body type. You know those kind of, you know, they're not the lean endurance dudes. They're more powerful, explosive guys.
Sure.
They do not like aerobic training. And And so when I was talking to Curcio, Coach Curcio at Appalachian State, my cross country coach was talking to him about training. He talked about velocity of VO2 max. And it was like, huh. So he gave me a suggestion on how they train in terms of velocity of VO2 max. And I thought, So I did some research. So it started with an athlete.
Right.
Finished up with a coach. I do some research and find some stuff on the internet from Veron Bellat, or really, I don't know, French sports scientist, on these VO2 intervals.
Huh.
And voila, I have a new training method that actually fits more of a sprinter body type. He doesn't mind running 200s,
right,
you know, at whatever speed, but he certainly hates doing, I'm going to do 45 minutes of hiking up the mountain. Not his thing, but I can get him to run 45 minutes of 200s.
Right.
So, you know, you get it from athletes, and you just have to be open to anything, because there's a lot of good stuff that you can get from athletes. Obviously, people smarter than me, which are a lot of them.
I couldn't agree with you more. What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Lead for God's Sake was the book that I read recently that was just talking about servant leadership. And you know, I've read a ton of, I'm a big Carolina fan, so I've read a ton of Dean Smith books, you know, Roy Williams. I love reading about coaches and how they coach and interact.
Right.
You know, I like Greg Everett's book from Catalyst on Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah.
You know, he's got one on sports that, talk more about the technical aspects of training. But again, coaching, you got to know your stuff, obviously, and be a technician in terms of skills and being able to ID and enhance and correct in skill development, but ultimately you have to be able to communicate effectively to make about any change.
No question.
And so the Lead for God's Sake was really huge that way, in terms of just looking at, you know, why do you do what you do? Are you doing it for yourself? And I have a different impression on coaching at my age now, 52 this will be, versus when I was 32.
No question.
And the perspective is different, and it's way more for me about the athlete and growing and developing young men and women of character. Skiing and sport is part of that. So that's why that book was really, I would highly recommend that.
It's
an easy read, but it has some really powerful statements in there in terms of why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm. Any apps that you guys regularly use?
No, I am I'm researching some specific apps I'm looking at in terms of programming at the moment. And we had been sort of in this mindset of the outdoors is our gymnasium so long, we forget that there's a world out there that can make life easier. It doesn't all have to be hard. And so we're just, the first beat technology I really love. But in terms of an app that's made my life totally easier, this internet's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm on YouTube all the time.
No, that's great, man. Well, buddy, I really appreciate this. It's been fun. And every time that I talk to somebody that's outside of my typical bubble of football and all that, I learn so much. And this has been no exception to that. So I really appreciate you taking the time. I know everybody's going to get a ton out of it. And obviously doing big things up there. And pretty cool to see, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.